I'll do it professional. 3, 2.
Hello and welcome to
And
Freebooters
we're in.
episode 3. Hello everybody, how are you? Hello Drew, how are you?
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm not too bad at all. Okay, all right. I'm going to address this right at the beginning of the podcast because I want to do it basically, which is I have been trying out these CBD vapes. So I might be having to go on one of those throughout the podcast. So if anyone's wondering, that's exactly what it is. Carries no nicotine, but it just infuses with a, this one is tropical lemonade. They come in all the flavors. They're quite good. I didn't really realize how readily available CBD things are for in the UK market, but you can just like pick them up in the shop. Sainsbury's do a CBD infused drink called Trip.
Really?
Yeah, now it's in big Sainsbury's, and it's usually next to the oat milk. It's in that sort of like hippie section where they don't really know what to put certain things like dry, like unrefrigerated oat milk and things like that. But yeah, and it's called Trip. It's got like very nice decorated packaging. You just drink it,
So this
and it's
isn't
good.
one of those things that's like legal through a loophole. This is like endorsed and fine.
It seems so. I mean, Sainsbury's, you don't, it's not, but also I've seen a lot of various like small like retail outlets that sell kind of like Holland and Barity kind of stuff, sell that stock them as well, so like hippie shops basically. And they're quite readily available in there as well. So it's kind of like, but I never, I don't know, did I miss the memo on that, or did I think it was just for medicinal or something like that? But and these, I got these in a shop, which, and they're kind of nice. So you just, each one's about 600 puffs, and it chills you out a little bit, chills you out a little. It's not like full on weed, right? Like it's not. You can have quite a lot of these, quite a lot of the drinks, and you'll really only ever be, mildly a bit chill. It's not,
Take the edge
it's,
off.
it takes the edge off. It's, and the reason I kind of look into them, and I'm probably only going to be like drift in and out of them. I'm probably not going to like make them part of my daily or weekly sort of like routine or whatever. But one of the things I did quite like about them, it's really good for helping you sleep. I used to try whenever I needed to like be up early and go to sleep early, I would always take Calms, which are like, they're just a brand of valerian root extract, which you can use just, but they always hit me a bit hard. I felt a bit groggy when I woke up, and they didn't feel that like good for you. I don't know what it was, but it felt like it was a bit hard, really. It knocked you out, so it did the job, but it also, I don't know, I felt like it took a lot out of you. I felt like it had a big chemical impact on your body. The CBD stuff, no, it makes you feel like you naturally, your muscles like sort of naturally relax a little bit. That it just sort of eases you into a sleep. That like I was watching some TV in bed and I was realizing I'm actually incredibly cozy. Like the kind of cozy you are, when you're waking up early and you've got to get out of bed for work or something, and that's like the last thing you want to do. And for some reason, your bed seems more comfortable than it's ever been. Yeah, like that kind of level of cozy. And then you can just f so easy to fall asleep under those conditions.
That's nice.
It is. So that's, if you're wondering what I'm puffing on. There's no nicotine or anything filthy like that. But
Me either.
you can get it in drop form as well. So you'd put some drops on your tongue. You can get it in like e-liquid form. So if you're on a electronic cigarette that just vapes liquid, you can just replace your nicotine solution with the CBD solution. It's all the same basic stuff, minor, obviously
I've got a
with the
friend
oat
who
change.
uses the drops, and yeah, they seem good for her. Like they chill her out.
So I've been trying it a few weeks now. Also, like it doesn't, I wouldn't say like full on gives you the munchies, but it certainly like makes you a bit peckish,
Little bit.
which is so it's kind of nice. Like it's soft. It's not like a full high, but it's like, I don't know. It's all right. It's nice to have at the end of a work day or at the end of a, or if you've got to be up early in the morning and you sit settle down with a couple of these, you drop off easily.
Sounds nice,
So yeah, if there's any like, I don't know, apparent change in my behavior or that I'm puffing away on this, that's exactly why. There is also something that I don't think we talked about prior to the show just now, but we did want to talk about at some point because I was blown away by this. I knew that the podcast would be generally well received. We've done podcasts like these before. They always tend to be reasonably well received. I think we have good bants, as they say. But I was quite surprised to see that we were getting, we would always get more views on YouTube than we would do on any kind of like Fediverse platform.
Yeah,
I've been on YouTube for the channel I've got is like 9 years old or something like that. But I've been in, had other channels and been around YouTube for ever since like 2010. And so I know how the platform.
Apart from that, the potential audience on YouTube must be millions of times larger.
Orders of magnitude bigger. Exactly. Yeah. But the view difference, I think our last, as of right now, the views for episode 2 of the Freebooters was about 600 views, whereas on PeerTube it's over 200, which is, I think, really good.
I think that's really impressive as well.
And I think the reason I it makes all the sense in the world, and we are talking about Fediverse issues. If you put up a video in the Fediverse, the title's anything to do with the Fediverse, what I think about the Fediverse, why the Fediverse is great, why the Fediverse is terrible, all of those videos, because of the meta effect of smaller social networks, you're going to get people that are interested in it, and they will be well-received videos. So we've got that work.
Saying that the only place where we bunny ears promote it is on Fedi as well, right?
So yeah, exactly.
We're already a little bit
slow. So it's very much in the preaching to the choir kind of segment.
But at least, the round about a quarter to a third of people are choosing to go watch it on ShareTube as opposed to YouTube. That's cool.
And that's really good. And to be honest, we don't do this for the money because there is none.
No, I'm totally in it for the money. You're not?
No.
Oh, okay.
I totally believe in what we do.
It's all about them checks for me.
I'll let you know when one comes in, I guess. if a couple of hundred people show up, if you were to do a talk in a town hall or something, and 200 people showed up to listen to you, that'd be a great evening. I'm quite impressed with the number of people on YouTube that showed up.
It's a weird thing because obviously we do not care about metrics, we do not care about numbers in and of themselves, but at the same time, of course, it's nice that a decent number of people are, weird.
Yeah, I mean, if we cared about numbers, we'd just hammer the YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
We know what to do to improve our chances, but at the end of the day, I think we're here to talk about the things that we like,
There's also when you made that post on Mastodon, commenting on this. We got a few messages in response to that, just people saying, I really enjoy hearing you two talk. That's lovely to hear.
And actually, interestingly enough, I would say we get about the same amount of comments, if not more comments, on the Fediverse than we do elsewhere.
Yeah, more.
Yeah. I think people are, because the thing is with the Fediverse is, unlike things like Twitter and YouTube and stuff, there isn't that top-down culture. People see stuff in the Fediverse as a conversation in and of itself.
Yeah.
They know that if they comment, or if you at home, people, audience knows that they comment to us or comment on a video, chances of us reading it are pretty more likely that we'll read it than not, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
So, and I think that probably does, sort of carry some weight. But also, we talk about PeerTube as a place where there's a content drought. Where the majority of PeerTube content is also available on YouTube. So the only thing that it's really offering is the software ethics of the platform it's on, which is a very that's not the strongest of sales pitch. So if, I like the idea of us being on here as a Fediverse, at least Fediverse first platform, where we can answer Fediverse comments and, that's where we'll engage. That's where we watch and enjoy this. That's where we're going
to
be.
If you see this, if you see the video on PeerTube and you have a general Fediverse account, a Mastodon or Pleroma or whatever, working out how to comment on that video, I still don't quite get it. Try and do the cross login thing, never work.
The comments come up when people this goes out. So it will come up in your Mastodon feed.
Yeah, no, I know how to comment on it on Mastodon, and then the comment appears on PeerTube. I don't. If you're watching it on PeerTube and you try to comment, I've tried to work out how to comment, you know, using my Mastodon account. I've tried to work out how to do that several times, and it's never worked.
I didn't know you could do that.
That might be where I'm falling down.
Although I'll tell you who have done it right. Owncast. I really like Owncast. I watch Hamish on Owncast. Hamish is a friend of ours He does most of his streaming on Owncast, all of his streaming on Owncast, and he doesn't like do it anywhere else, right? Like he is 100% Owncast. He's a better Fedverse citizen than we are in reality.
Hang on, is Owncast ready?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought it was...
So if you subscribe to the handle hamish@thepolarbear.co.uk, you'll get a Mastodon notification every time he goes live.
Okay, but that's like a relay thing. Does Owncast have Fediverse built into, you know, the core Owncast thing when you're, you know, like, if, can you comment, you know, the chat?
On... No. And I think it's decidedly done that because I suppose there's no point in reading chat comments on Mastodon, right?
True. Because that's true.
So to make comments on Owncast, you basically just put in a username at the door. You don't have an account. You just put in a username at the door. And I think on the moderation side, you can determine from certain metrics whether or not that person's legitimate. So if someone's trying to be me, for example, they've got like they can ban them or block them or whatever. You can assign, I think it tends to work itself out, right? Like you can block people that abuse username privileges and all that kind of stuff. So there's moderation tools on that level, but people don't need an account. They just say that you start off with a username that you're given, and then you can change it to something, whatever you want it to be. Mm-hmm. But if you subscribe to it using your Fediverse account, that's obviously verified as you, or you know, that's like obviously an account of you with you, and then you can reboost that and you can like it and all that other kind of stuff.
That's cool.
So I hope that was easy enough to understand.
The chat on Owncast uses WebRTC, doesn't it? So it's very, very ephemeral. Whereas on Twitch, I think the chat is IRC backed, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool. I wouldn't be surprised now. It must be the case that Twitch is the biggest like IRC user.
Yes, I think that's got to be a foregone conclusion.
Probably by a mile. Yeah,
and it is IRC. Some people have assumed that it's like a bridge or a compatibility layer or something like that. No, it's an actual Twitch built. Now I think they use their own Twitch software to build the IRC server that they use, or servers. But it is as much an IRC server as anything else. So the way to log in is a bit clunky, but you can do, for example, Hexchat or Pigeon or whatever IRC client that you might use.
I mean, that seems a mad way to do it now, but I guess they made it years ago. Like WebRTC is much cleaner way to do that.
Yeah, well, they probably did it long before WebRTC was... Well, yeah, they did, because originally they used Flash Video.
Yeah. When it was Justin.tv.
Oh, God, them's the old days. But and I think, like, Hamish has found a really good stride with his streams. He has his little schedule, and he gets as many views on Owncast as he did on Twitch.
Yeah,
maybe more. Like every time I go into one of his streams, there's always a couple of people in the Fediverse that have like recently discovered him. So discoverability is there, you know, but I don't think it lends itself to the same kind of celebrity culture that the top-down platforms have.
Mm-hmm.
I think even if the Fediverse takes off, I think that people like Owncast streamers and PeerTubers and all that kind of, you know, the content created on the Fediverse, I think that it will be I don't think you'll get very many of your big superstars. I think you'll get lots of people in lots of different corners.
I've got things to say about that in relation to the Twitter exodus or whatever we want to call it.
Go for it.
I mean, first of all, I don't think we talked about this last time because I think it happened since, but Stephen Fry joined the Fediverse and killed the server he joined for a few days.
Yeah.
which is partly... Did I talk about this last time? I feel like I've talked about
You may
this.
Have glanced over it because it is something that you don't like about the Fediverse, the idea of potentially becoming too celebrity-y.
Yeah, and that's kind of being reinforced. I mean, part of it is these celebrities coming in, just reading a guide, going, oh, we just pick a server and then join it. And there's an ignorance. It's not really their fault, but there's an ignorance there. They don't understand that, you know, if Beyonce decides to join, you know, a small Mastodon server, like, that's going to kill Mastodon. You know, that's going to take the whole thing down.
Yeah, I mean, if she was going in informed, she'd set up her own Mastodon server.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but they don't know that, and you know, again, it's not.
But maybe norms can change. Like the introducing them into this kind of system where people are expected to take responsibility for their own footprint. Maybe this would be this could be the trigger of a bigger culture shift.
Now that would be nice, but then I also think. So these celebrities on Twitter, they're used to a very parasocial relationship, right? Not whereas on Mastodon, I'm saying Mastodon to mean Fedi social network, right? And I know that's not technically correct, but that's where we are now, right? For sure. Mastodon is about actual social relationships, I think.
Yes.
I think it's built around that. It's engineered around that. It's, you know, it's geared around that. And then we've got these celebrities coming on. And I checked this morning. I've been keeping an eye on it, you know, for the past week or so. So Stephen Fry, 72,000 people following him.
On the Fedi?
On the Fedi. Guess how many people he's following?
Oh, it's like a dozen or something like that.
Yeah, 27. George Takei, do you see George Takei's joined?
I have seen him on the Fediverse, yeah.
123 followers. Guess how many he's following?
123 followers?
Sorry, 1,000. 123. Okay, that's...
All right. Well, like a dozen again, I guess.
Yeah, like 31 he's following, and that to me, I know you don't have to be following somebody to interact with them, and they're going to get so many comments and like, but it says something to me. It says something about their expectations and the way they're going to use this platform.
Yeah. And yes, but once maybe George Takei. George Takei has always enjoyed that parasocial relationship in the ways I've understood him. I don't follow him particularly closely, but you know, he's done similar things like with YouTube and other platforms where he, you know, he just tries to you know, play the typical social media game as so many celebrities do. I would think twice about Stephen Fry because he was an early adopter of Twitter. So I think he does tend to poke and prod at these things a little bit more. I think some of the celebrities that we're seeing now might be potentially be some of the more earnest of the lot. I think there could be a time when
yeah, it's definitely true, but I still think they're bought into that style of relationship.
Yeah, but I think the Fediverse could potentially challenge that view that they've got, or they could just realize that they can't exploit it well enough and then move on. In which case, no great loss.
I also think it's going to be interesting because Stephen Fry is a bit of a turf apologist, right?
He's yes, well, yes, yes.
In his mind, I think he wants to sit in the fence, and he's like he sees both sides.
Yeah, he wants to sit on the fence, right?
But yeah, when you're saying both sides are too extreme, there's one side that's denying the existence of the other side. I think you know that you can't be in the middle on that.
Mm.
If you are, you're on the side of you know.
Well, the Desmond Tutu quote, isn't it? If in cases of injustice, you take the side of you. What's the one?
I know what you mean. Yeah,
like basically in cases of injustice, if you decide not to get involved, you're taking the side of the oppressor.
Yeah.
Or status quo, or something. You know, that's the gist of it.
So I think that's going to be interesting. That's going to complicate things, especially given that. Mm-hmm. And that leads into another thing: the massive influx of. Twitter users, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we welcome them, and you know it's nice. Mm-hmm. But I think part of it is that I think they're coming to Mastodon thinking like, "Here we are. You've been waiting for us. You've been waiting for popularity, and like, here we are. Like, as like, they're a gift to us. When in fact, I'm sure some people say it that way, but for me, it's quite the opposite. We had this lovely little space, and it's being in, you know, it's being gentrified essentially. And I'm not a huge fan of that. I welcome the people, but I'm not a fan of the process. I feel like it's gonna, what happened to the web when it became popular, that's it's gonna happen to Mastodon. It's all downhill for me.
Like, all right, you know, maybe I definitely knew because I've been on Mastodon. I counted the other day. I didn't realize I'd been on since the very beginning of 2016.
Really?
Yeah, because at the time I was looking, deliberately looking for an open source social network. I wanted to see what open source stuff was in that space, and it was obviously GNU Social, which was, you can't sell people on GNU Social, especially 2016. I mean, Mastodon was created because GNU Social was not was a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
I love what they did, and GNU Social is a precursor to what we have today.
It's
the building blocks on what good stuff was built on. So I'm not, you know, I'm not saying anything against GNU Social in reality, but I do remember when I there were a couple of times I tried to hook on to GNU Social, and I think I might have made an account on the server here or there or something that's no longer with us. But I got to be honest, in some ways actually, a lot of it was I was very new and curious about this space, and there were a substantial number of people with very strong opinions, and I kind of was like, kind of like it was a bit, and I can imagine maybe Mastodon might feel like that to some people coming in, not in an exodus, but I mean, that's just life, you know. That's,
I mean, to
you
know, a large extent, I this is covered in some of the articles I've been linking recently, but I probably said this before on here as well, but the Fediverse was largely, the impetus behind it was largely by groups who are, I'm phrasing this very poorly right from the start. The space was created by feminists and trans communities, right? Largely responsible for creating.
Space, what do you mean by this space? Do you mean like Mastodon?
Yeah. Not feminists much. Trans people and, you know, LGBT. It's, I mean, just being there, it feels like a trans and LGBTQ plus space, IA, right? It feels like that. And it feels like me as a, you know, both of us as, you know, cishet white men, for the most part, we're guests. And I feel like I'm a guest in this space that wasn't exactly made for me, and I've got to be on my best behavior. I've got to, you know, this is their house, I obey their rules, right?
It depends. Like, if you the very early days of the Fediverse, before it was called the Fediverse, go, you know, that dates back to 2000 and, like, I don't know, 2002 or something like that, really early. I got to imagine people back then and who were sort of starting the space for the first time probably were more your free software fanatics, right?
That was more your nerds, but yeah, I think it was an original sort of escape from Twitter and places, you know, places where these people were used to set up a place where, you know, they were safe.
Yeah, for sure.
And we are, you know, we're guests there, but as you know, more and more Twitter users. I saw a couple of interesting polls the other day, and of course, you know, it's polls on Mastodon. It's questionable how representative they were, but they had a lot of, you know, a lot of votes. One was just a poll of, are you an old Mastodon user, you know, pre-Twitter exodus, or are you a new user? And it was, the majority of people who answered this poll were new users.
Oh, really?
By quite a long margin, right? Which doesn't mean that, you know, the majority of people on Mastodon right now are new users, but, you know, but it's already shifted, you know, quite substantially.
That's a substantial, shift.
Another one was just before the exodus, and it was just a where are you from poll, just continent. Mm-hmm. And Fedi at that point was like overwhelmingly European.
And that's one of the things I kind of like about the Fediverse is that it's a social media that isn't built around America, you know?
Yeah. Not that it's European, but that it's not North American. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, the vast majority of the people coming from Twitter to Mastodon are going to be, you know, USA American. I think that's going to shift things. They're also, you know, Mastodon is undeniably, there's exceptions, of course, but it's undeniably a strongly left-leaning place, right?
Yes, but I mean, there are definitely right servers, alt-right servers, probably Nazi servers, you know.
But they get defederated.
But then they still exist, though.
They exist, but they're not federated. in which case they're a separate network, I would say.
The Naziverse.
The Naziverse. So the Fediverse that we interact with, you know, I think it's substantially left. And by left-leaning, I don't mean, you know, how this is meant in an American party political sense. I mean, you know, socialists and leftward, socialists, communists, anarchists, anarcho-syndicalists, you know, that side of the spectrum. And the people coming from Twitter, especially the people, you know, reacting to Musk, are going to be, you know, mostly like left
liberals.
Yeah. They are inherently shifting the Overton window of Mastodon to the right.
To the Hillary Clinton zone.
The Clinton
zone.
And
possibly. Yeah. But. That's not really but so much as a, like, that's not untrue. But in many cases, like, it's going to be interesting to watch how the Fed, look, like, I think of the Fedverse as this weird, like, organic entity, right? Like a social version of, like, I don't know, like some sort of, like, mass, like the Borg or something like that, you know, where it just sort of works itself out, right? And it all, you know.
There was a post today I saw, somebody was comparing the Fediverse to, I can't remember the name, but that type of fungus that just, like, is connected, like, over vast areas underground. Mm. Like, it just looks like a little fungus here and there, but it's actually, so that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, like, and good things will happen to it, bad things will happen to it, and it will develop, I think, like it has done in the past, sort of like antibodies to certain things, right? Mm. Like, for example, do we remember Hive Day? I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before.
You mentioned this last time. Yeah.
I love it. So Hive Day is basically just when a company decided to set up an instance. They changed around the UI a little bit, and they made it so that they tried to smooth over the mechanics of the Fediverse. So you had, like, one social timeline, and then so I think it had one local timeline, but also it had the ability to connect with people in the Fediverse. So it linked into the Fediverse, but not all the way in, like Mastodon servers typically tend to do. And it got so much hate because it was a clear attempt of a company just trying to monetize, to try and make a business out of the Fediverse. And I think a lot of people, and I think a lot of people actually as well, kind of joined in for the memes. Like, they kind of like, there was a little bit of angry mob stuff going on, which like, there were people that were showing up and be like, yeah, let's stick it to this company that thinks they can, you know, where the, but it was kind of hilarious to watch that they just get chased out of the Fediverse, which is trying to make a buck off of us. They were trying to sell what they, I think, you know, and if you want to look at it in a capital or like in a more cynical way, I'll say, you could say, well, they were basically trying to monetize us as an audience. Like they built this social, networking platform, which I think was just forked code from Mastodon anyway, you know, mess it around a bit, and then maybe start, I don't know, putting some tracking or ads or something in it or whatever, but basically just trying to develop this social media platform and then hook us in as an audience so that they could say, this new social network already has an active user base. It was basically the most overt attempt at gentrification that you can really get, right?
Yeah. Although, I do think this Twitter. What's the opposite of an exodus? What's the exodus from the point of view of the place being moved to? An incidus.
An incidus.
Let's go. And June would know. let's go with incidus. This incidus is. I mean, it is a process of gentrification. I'm okay with it, but I it worries me. But like, these are human beings, and I welcome them fundamentally.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And or you can put out a really good text actually, who said that, you know, you're going to notice a lot of changes in the Fediverse over the next coming months, and I think that it's important to like remember that, you know, the new people are as much a part of us as the old people, and that, like, you know, we all have our reasons for being here, and we can just try and sort of make the best of it and not try and have a system that sort of pulls rank, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. And I think honestly, when it comes down to it, I think the worst that would happen is a bit more fragmentation in the Fediverse. And I'm not necessarily certain that would be a bad thing. Maybe, you know, if the left wing people feel like, you know, this space has become too, like, you know, too liberal mainstream, depoliticized, like we can set up our own one, defederate from all of them, and have our left wingy discussions. You know, that's fine.
Yeah, I think there'll be a I think it will work out. I genuinely do, I think a lot of these people, a lot of this incidence, in reality, I think will probably leave at some point soon. Maybe when Tumblr gets going again or something like that. I maybe people will be just attracted to the safe old silos of the warm bosom of a multinational corporation. I don't know, because I always, in my head, I always think of Mastodon as the alternative. That I like, you know, that sort of the almost like the underground social network.
That's another thing I kind of wanted to say, actually. For me, Mastodon isn't an alternative to anything. Like, I've never liked Twitter. I've never been a Twitter user. You know, I tried a couple of times for a day and just hated it. Like, it's not that I was like, I want an open source Twitter. I don't want any kind of Twitter. To me, Mastodon is, you know, it's very, very much its own thing. So again, I don't want these users to come over. And I think for the most part, I think the community is doing a really good job of informing them of stuff like this, actually. That, you know, we're not a Twitter alternative. We're our own thing. And you see really nice posts by Twitter users coming over and, like, appreciating what Mastodon is, appreciating that it is friendlier, it's more social, it's less about metrics. You know, they seem to really like that, you know, some of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't really say what the future holds. I do find it hard to think of Mastodon as something that would go mainstream. I don't imagine it's something that seems to, but then what do I know? You know, I've been wrong about loads of shit before. You know, I'm not to be listened to.
I think it is becoming mainstream right now. I think we're seeing it. I mean, all the major news outlets have written about Mastodon in the past couple of weeks, right? BBC, yeah. CNN, ABC, like they've all had, you know, Mastodon, what is it? Like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, well, Eugen follows me on Mastodon. Maybe we should get him in for an interview. That would blow this pod. Yeah, take that, Joe Rogan.
But yeah, also, I should say, like, you know, obviously there's been a shit ton of new users, and I've added a ton of them. I've started following them. Like, they, some interesting people saying interesting stuff. It's cool.
Some people will disagree with this. I quite like that there are actually, like, organizations that are setting up a Mastodon presence as well. Yeah. For example, Election Maps UK, they came to Mastodon. They're only going to post out, like, you know, the RSS feed to the website or whatever, you know, imagine it's going to be bridged, if I'm completely honest. But because it's one of those things that's like a magazine or like a asynchronous, a deliberately fostered parasocial relationship have with their audience, I don't tend to follow
a weather bot or something. That's fine. Exactly. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, so I quite like seeing a few of those come over here as well. We're perfectly capable of obviously cloning a Twitter feed for the Fediverse, but it's just nice that it's endorsed, I guess. Or
I'd like it if all, because I mean, that's effectively a bot, and I do think they should go on bots in space. Like, Fedi users have been very good about keeping bots in one place. I mean, any hostile bot is going to do its own thing, and you know, you can't think of that, but I'd like maybe, you know, have a server for that kind of service, for what is essentially like a news aggregator type service or something like that. Like, keep that, you know, so that people, because I'm happy that those kind of things are on the Fediverse, but I personally don't want to see them, so I'd want to block them.
And I think I can easily imagine in the future there being companies set up that would actually host bot instances and things like that on a bot server. These are the things I think will get sorted in time. I think there will become a natural reason where you have one server for this and one server for that. For example, bots. I think Toot.Wales having a server for Welsh people is particularly useful. Gives people a place to practice their Welsh, if nothing else. You often get the cases where, like, a company will offer a Learn Welsh program for free. A few people will take it up, but, like, you've just find yourself learning a language with no other people around to, like, just, you know. And I imagine social media is probably quite a good place to practice language anyway, because you've got a bit of time to think, right? It's not like you can think about it, you can, you know, work it out. And So that's kind of nice.
I was saying to you earlier about Toot.Wales. Is it Toot.Wales, isn't it? It's done a really good job of amplifying the voice of the Welsh on the Fediverse, and I think there's a lesson in that. You know, lots of like smaller interest groups can, you know, start their own server, foster a culture, and be part of the Fedi in a way that's, you know, connected to everything, but also able to define, you know, their own. I mean, Black Twitter did that on Twitter, but you know, I think they'll be able to do what they did on Twitter in a fairly hostile environment, really, in a lot of ways, right? Being able to take control of that themselves, I don't want four people, but being able to you know, take control of that and define that for themselves, I think is going to be quite powerful.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. And also, on a more like superficial level, it's kind of nice when people are out walking their dog and they send photographs of like where they, you know, the scenery, their dog walks and stuff like that. And being able to like at least recognize bits and pieces of it, it feels homely. It feels very, you know, like cozy, as far as a social network can actually kind of feel cozy. And it's kind of nice.
I think Twitter can sort of invisibilize geographicity. There's no way that's a word, right? But the idea is that we're all next door neighbors, right? Which, you know, there's a niceness to that. But like, you're having Toot.Wales, it reminds you that, you know, geographically you're closer to these people. Like, that doesn't mean you don't care about
them better or
politically or whatever. But it gives, you know, it makes things more human.
Absolutely, yeah, it does, and it feels very human. Because, you know, the moderating team, of which I'm a member, we're out there talking to people as well. We're not sat in a, you know, office somewhere giving the thumbs up to post or thumbs down to post. Like, we're there in the middle of the conversation where, you know, talking to people. You know, people are on a first-name basis with the people that moderate their instance. People are not on a first-name basis with the people that moderate Twitter or Facebook.
I've got to say, I've never been a Twitter user. The only time I use Twitter is like if somebody links to like a thread on Twitter that's interesting, like I'll click through, I'll read the thread. That's the limit of my engagement on Twitter. But for the past week, I think I've logged into, not logged in, but had a look at Twitter every day just to see what mad shit Elon Musk is saying.
I know, it's so entertaining. It's amazing.
And I assume you saw he had a poll about whether to, I don't want to talk about this too much, but he had a poll about whether to reinstate Trump, right?
I did it, yeah. And it was mostly yeses, right?
What amused me is it came out 52-48, right?
Oh, really? Was it that close?
Which is the same as the Brexit
poll, yeah.
It kind of amused me. But yeah, in favour, he's been reinstated now, I believe.
Yeah, actually, I was reading an interesting toot about this the other day, today actually, this morning. It was about the conundrum between Twitter and Truth Social, right? Like, if Trump were to go on Twitter, then he would be sort of accepting that Truth Social is kind of not really a very good social network. It's almost like he's de-endorsing or unendorsing Truth Social by going back on Twitter, especially
Like he is very much like the fake news thing, I think, was taken too far, you know, over the last decade or whatever. I think the media has been, you know, fake for a very long time. It's just that, you know, liberals got pissed off that it was fake and not in their direction anymore. So, you know, but Trump very much creates his own reality. I don't know if you saw he gave a speech recently announcing that he's going to run for president in 2024.
Yeah.
And if you saw the speech, he's running on his record. He talked about what a good job he did, how, you know, the economy was brought back, you know, and we could, you know, all this stuff. Complete fucking fiction, but it absolutely doesn't matter for him. He can just, you know. It's like, do you remember when we all had gold coming out of our, you know, like, you can just say whatever he wants.
But the thing is, I know, it was recently that, like, his exact appeal hit me square between the eyes about what it gets. And it's when Donald Trump and Elon Musk had that little bit of falling out and they had that bit of tit for tat on Twitter. And it's like, watching Donald Trump go after people you don't like is so cathartic. I've never felt cathartic. It's like watching a school bully someone you don't like. You know, it's just like, same kind of vibe. It's not a good vibe, but because Donald Trump goes after a good segment of people, I think other people just hook into him like that. He could do anything. He could say like anything. Yeah. As long as he goes after the people that they don't like, he could do whatever he wants. Maybe. And I think this him coming over to Twitter is possibly a signifier that he's actually serious about this. I don't know. At the beginning, I thought, oh, is he just, you know, throwing his weight around?
About what?
Running for president.
Oh, no, he's, yeah, no, absolutely going to do that.
I thought there's a possibility that he might just be, like, being a bit of a rabble-rouser, to put a nice term on it. But the fact that he's now back on Twitter, and he's kind of, which is kind of tacitly thrown off Truth Social, I suppose you know, you do that when you've got goals to accomplish.
I'll make
the Republican primaries fun to watch again.
Don't want to talk I don't want to talk about Trump too much though, because it is depressing.
Toots. They're not toots anymore, are they?
Yeah, no, they're not toots anymore.
Controversial subject in the Fediverse. I know this is a Fediverse heavy episode again, but I guess me and Drew have been spending a lot of time in it.
Yeah, I'm fine for it to be a Fediverse episode, a Fediverse special. I should also say, like, if any of the new Twitter people are listening to this, first of all, welcome. Second of all, don't fuck the place up. And third of all, leave a comment. Hello, welcome.
Yeah, hello, yeah. And if you disagree with this, if you want, or like, you know, set us straight or explain, you know, like, just, you know, it's okay.
What is Twitter? Not really sure.
Well, but yeah, so Twitter is where... No, I've got nothing.
They're not toots, Chris. They're not toots.
They don't have toots on Twitter. Basically, a long time ago, when Mastodon was in reasonably early development, quite a well-known YouTuber called HBomberGuy, who is famous for doing the video Fallout 3 is crap and here's why. Actually, I quite enjoy his videos, but that is a very well-made video, but I think Fallout 3 is pretty great. But he got a very early Fediverse account. He offered to make a cash donation to the development of Mastodon, I believe, if in exchange he called posts toots. And that was like the first bit of fame Mastodon ever saw. That was the first bit of, like, you know, decent money that Mastodon ever saw. So Eugen made the call and he said, yeah, all right, we'll call him toots. A lot of people, including myself, did not like that change, but we put up with it because it's, you know. And some instances removed toot for something else. You know, like if you set up your own instance, then you can
call it whatever you like. Yeah.
You can call it whatever you like. It's the defaults, really.
Yeah.
So after now, what is probably the best part of 6 years, they, as of Mastodon 4.0, I think it is, toots have now become publishers.
Publishers. I don't know why he didn't just use post, because then it's the verb and the noun are the same. Yeah. And calling them posts seem reasonable. Post as a verb seems reasonable, but publish is such an odd choice. It has it has connotations of, you know, having a publisher, having a third party that's, you know, interfering with what you do. It's an odd choice. I didn't like to. I don't like the word toot. I like that it was a playful word.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the unseriousness, the slightly punky kind of, like, you know, we're not businessy. We're kind of, if anything, a little bit, you know, if McDonald's come along, they're not going to want to call them toots, right? I guess maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't care. But I like that it was a little bit playful. Didn't like the particular word toot. You felt silly saying toot.
Mm-hmm.
But publish. Eugen's German, I believe, right? And it seems like the kind of choice a German would make.
I mean, I was going to say that, but refrained from it. Yeah, I guess.
German like Andrew wouldn't.
Also, I saw something on the Fediverse just now that kind of illustrates this. I actually do follow in a very similar place. I didn't like toot at the time, because the thing is, in UK British English, toot means fart.
I don't think that's true. I've never heard until I saw somebody say it on Mastodon, toot. I've heard it in like American sitcoms and stuff. Never heard it in an English context.
Yeah, well, actually, now you think about it, it is quite kind of rare for me to hear it. It's usually very cutesy. I don't know if you hang out with very many cutesy people.
Yeah.
It's but then also, I did comment on that quite some time ago, and someone says, well, social media status is kind of something you really fart out, isn't it?
I don't know, I think post is straightforward, publish find the reading. I'm gonna start calling them publishers. I like that publishers. How many publishers have you got? That's another thing. Another moan about like the Twitter users. I've seen several times in profiles of new users from Twitter. Like, I had 17,000 followers on Twitter. Like, they'd literally put in their follow account in their description on Mastodon, which is like, yeah, no, you're missing.
I haven't seen that, but that's kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, like, I get why it's kind of like modern day media currency, right?
Yeah.
And in the future, journalists are going to be hired. Like, I'm a journalist and I was hired because I know people who would know what's going on in the town, right? So you tend to get known for, and I wasn't hired for my prowess as a writer. The newspaper were like under the assumption and belief that they would be able to like teach me anything I needed to know. I've got a degree, so obviously I can string a sentence together.
Yeah.
So, and it turned out, it worked, it's all right. Yeah. Like, you learn a new style guide, you learn a little bit of structure to what you're writing. But at the end of the day, it's not the most complicated job in the world. But in the future, a lot of jobs, marketing, any kind of promotions, journalism, all that kind of stuff, like, your follow account's going to be something you put on your CV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not great. That's pretty bad.
Maybe this will break that. Because unless you are, focused on those parasocial relationships, one-to-many communication, it's not about how many people you know, it's about who you know, like the old cliche.
It's going to be interesting to see how, like, Gen Z, and even the following generation after that, like, hook into all of this, because they do not so much bother with Twitter or Facebook. I don't know about YouTube.
Yeah, I think YouTube is everybody, really. But yeah, Twitter feels very millennial with a bit of a Gen X edge, I would say.
And I would, and Instagram is very millennial with maybe a slight Gen Z edge, but like a tiny one.
I think everything apart from TikTok really just feels very millennial. All of the, because they were built, the big social networks and the big corporate websites were really coming into their own as millennials were coming up, maybe not coming of age, but as millennials were growing up.
Snapchat. That was a thing when Snapchat was new.
Yeah.
It was hitting my generation. But I don't know anyone my age now that has Snapchat, or I know very few people like it. But I do know a lot of people younger than me that use Snapchat. So I think Snapchat has kind of flopped down a generation. It seems to be more Zoomery. And it seems like Zoomers tend to like social media on their phone. That seems to be like one sort of big takeaway. And they tend to like multimedia posts. You've got, things like voice notes and picture posts and video posts and all that kind of thing with TikTok. But also, like, you tend to notice, like, they tend to like not care about branding. Zoomers don't seem to have that same kind of like.
I think millennials were the ones that, because Gen X is very anti-corporate, I would say. We're too cool, very very individualistic. We're too cool to care about anything but fuck corporations, kind of generation, right? And the millennials, I think, they're far more trusting of authority and corporations than Gen X were. And I think Gen Z are a bit more like Gen X, a bit more fuck corporations, but in a very different Dadaistic kind of crazy way that I very much enjoy.
I just feel like millennials have just beaten down and so pessimistic that they don't believe in anything and has generated a fair amount of apathy, or,
I don't know. I think millennials, definitely unhappy with what's going on, but trusting in systems, trusting in corporations. That's the impression. I mean, like, they are the big social media generation, right?
Yeah.
I think they trust processes and systems
but
way more.
Yeah, but then what's more of that trusting and processing system than traditional things like TV, things like traditional TV?
Oh yeah, no, I think any millennial listeners are going to vomit into their eyeballs now as I say this, but I think millennials and boomers have a lot in common. Because millennials, it's shitty for millennials now, you know, can't afford houses, all that stuff. But they were born into like the 90s, right? And
yeah,
the 90s was a period of, we thought every, you know, it was the end of history, everything sorted out. Neoliberal democracy is, you know, it works, you know, the economy is booming, everybody's employed and wants to be employed, like everything was going great, and we thought we had it solved. It's kind of a lot in common with that, you know, with that post-war period of the post-war settlement again, where, you know, everybody was quite comfortably off, the economy was going well. I think there was a comfort to their upbringing, whereas Gen X and Gen Z were both born into the madness, into the aftermath, right?
Possibly, I don't know, because you can apply a lot of that to Gen X with the.
I know, because we're 70s and 80s. That's you know, literally winter of discontent. And
well, yeah,
and
but once you hit 30, you were all right, right?
How do you mean?
Well, once you hit 30, then you were in.
Our late teenage years, I guess teenagers and late teenage years were in the 90s, which were great. But yeah, not our. We weren't born into comfort.
We weren't forged by the fires of it.
No, we were forged by the fires of it, and then we had a bit of comfort.
Quite possibly.
And also, I mean, it's well worth saying that when we talk about these generational clades, it's very
general.
No, not just that, but it's very Euro/America-centric. It's, you know, because we talk about boomers in America, like, you know, what we're saying only applies to, like, does not apply, you know, black people who were born in the 40s and 50s. Having a great time in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
it's very conditional.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Right, have we got another thing to talk about?
I got some things. I got some gamey things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I've gone back to traditional roguelikes. I've been playing a few of those.
All right.
Some of the mainstays. I played quite a bit of Tales of Majiao.
Oh, okay. Oh, I like. I keep meaning to get into Tales of Majiao, but whenever it comes to the apt get command, I can never remember how to spell it.
See, it's on Steam. I've got it on Steam. Ah. Yeah, you can just download it for free as well. It's pretty great. I'll just list the ones I've played this week. So I played Tales of Majiao, Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup. Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup.
Oh, okay.
DCSS. Brogue. And Shattered Pixel Dungeon. So there's lots of ways that you can sort of divide up roguelikes, but one of the ways is the NetHack like roguelikes, where you're just in a dungeon and you're just going down the floor through this dungeon, right? And that covers, you know, a lot of the roguelikes. And then there's the ones like Tales of Majiao and ADOM and Cataclysm to an extent, where the ones where you have an open world which has dungeons in it, and it's more like the kind of RPGs we used to, where you can get quests, you can go to dungeons, you can, you know, join factions, that kind of thing. And I think I prefer the latter more than the very traditional NetHack type. So I've been really enjoying Tales of Majiao. Very, very good. Lots of classes, lots of races. It's a big open world, and you can go into dungeons at your own pace. There's lots of dungeons you can go into. It's got a main quest you can follow, but it's also got, you know, like sub quests and stuff like that. It's a great game. Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup is, I would say, NetHack made reasonable. So it's NetHack that feels more like a modern game in that, you know, arbitrary random things aren't just going to happen to you. It's a bit more understandable.
Uh-huh.
Going through them very quickly. Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup is great. Brogue is an interesting one. It's very beautiful to look at. It's very traditional. You can have the ASCII tile set, or you can have like sort of more... I should really be bringing these up, and if I completely forgot, I've got a browser.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking at Brogue. I need to specify the roguelike, not the shoe. Looks like that. You can have the tile sets. It's very, very cool.
Oh, it looks kind of cool. I like
that. It's really cool. It's very understandable. So both Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup has an amazing tutorial that guides you through everything. Brogue is just kind of like inherently a bit more understandable, has a lot of instructions on screen. You can just pick it up and play it very easily. What Brogue does is it doesn't have XP and levels, I believe. I've not played that much of it, but I believe it doesn't have XP and levels. It just, you get better gear as you go on. So it's very gear-centric. But what I really wanted to mention was Shattered Pixel Dungeon, right? Mm. So this is primarily a roguelike for your phone. I'll bring it up. A traditional full-on roguelike that works on your phone. It's also on Steam. You can play it on a PC. You can also download it for free from the website. I have downloaded it for free from the website. You just get a jar file which you run with Java. And I was a bit not wary of this one, but like there it is on the Google Play Store. I was like, you can't do a really good roguelike on a phone. This is going to be like very, very sort of like casualified and that. But I gave it a go, and it's not. It's just full on roguelike with extremely simple controls. It's basically just left click, right click. I think like. It's super easy to control. Yeah, it worked perfectly on a phone or a touchscreen. If you just want a really simple, like you just lean back and play a roguelike, I would strongly recommend it.
That's cool. I'm looking at it now. It seems, yeah, like good old...
I don't know if it's in the F-Droid. It's pay for in the stores on phone. Might be in the F-Droid.
Is it open source?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, cool.
So it's on Steam. Pay for it on Steam. You can pay through it through the app stores. You can download it for free from the website, or it might also be an F-Droid.
I'll have a look in F-Droid now. I've got it on my phone.
Yeah, I played this one for a couple of hours, just like whizzing through the dungeons and that. And it's amazing that it's almost got as much depth as you know your net hacks and your brogues and all that, but with one click controls, and I don't quite know how they've done that.
Yeah, it's here.
It's on F-Droid. Nice.
It's on F-Droid.
There's loads of So you can get that for free. You can pay for it to support it. You can get it on Steam. I'm going to pick this up on Steam at some point because it is genuinely it's a good chill casual. I would say a casual, not casual in that it's shallow, but casual in that you can chill out and play it.
I quite like that when like these open source projects just charge a couple of quid on their app stores.
That's what I mean. I picked up Tales of Magiol on Steam just to support it, you know. It's great. That's a genuinely fantastic game.
Yeah, it is a bit of a tricky biscuit that like payment is so can be so smooth on the big corporate systems. I'll probably just do I'll probably buy this on maybe Google Play if it's for you know.
That's fine. They're still getting some money, right?
They're getting some money. I think Google are taking too much of that.
Capitalism, but, blah blah. I will say, Tales of Magiol. It's if you want it to be, you can turn this off, but it's kind of networked, and the person who I forget his name, but the person who made it is basically a one person project, right? The person who made it can start events, so there can be like while you're playing the game, an event can kick off, and sometimes late at night he gets drunk and just like presses all the buttons for all the events at the same time, and they're just like it's shit is going mad. And I kind of love that. Again, it's the humanness of that, right?
That's
I kind of
amazing.
Love that.
That's just the best. Oh, I want to play Tales of Magiol. I could never.
It's a great game. I would say the thing that might be a sticking point, the thing that surprised me, because most roguelikes, you're going to die a lot, right? But it's kind of, you die and then you're like, okay, I shouldn't have taken this on at this point. I should have done that first. Like, you learn something from your death. Whereas Tales of Magiol has got this habit of just like, sometimes when you open a chest, randomly leveled and sort of skilled creatures can come out, and sometimes it can literally be something that is essentially impossible. It can just drop something on you that is impossible, and some people really don't like that. But you get to a point where you start to recognize what is impossible and you run away. So
you can't speedrun something like that, can you?
No. I'm sure people have.
Well, it kills the speedrun, I guess. But I like... Do you know what roguelike I keep coming back to?
Mm.
Heavy Bullets.
As a roguelite. No, we're talking traditional roguelikes. People get very, very angry at you for equating those two things, Chris.
I thought it was a rogue.
You're going to do your penance.
What makes it a roguelite?
Heavy Bullets is... It's definitely an ambiguous term. I'm not picky about it. But if I say traditional roguelike, I mean turn-based, top-down, randomly generated, permadeath, no meta progression. I would say are the key.
What's the first one of that list you said?
Turn-based.
It's not turn-based, but it's all the other of those.
Is it really no meta progression?
I don't think so. I think you start completely from the beginning.
Yeah, no, that's
from
cool. But it's an action. I would say that's an action roguelike.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely action. It's really good. I like it, but like it's the catharsis, and it's such a basic game. You'll play it for 20 minutes before you get bored, but those 20 minutes will be kind of fun, you know?
Yeah. Those kind of games, honestly, apart from Hades, have never really hooked me in.
Oh, I love Hades.
Hades is great. Hades is really great.
Oh, I need to get back into it.
Specifically, the reason I've gone for the traditional roguelikes is I wanted something longer term, like a... We talked about it before. A Hades run is like 40 minutes, and I wanted something, you know, where a run is a day or two, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, that looks kind of cool. Is this a new game, Shattered Pixel Dungeon?
No, I don't think so. Let's have a look. See what we have.
I'm looking for open source game of the year. But it kind of has to be released this year.
I don't think it will. What have I done wrong?
Let's have a look.
Wikipedia doesn't know what I'm talking about. Why not? It's definitely got a Wikipedia page. I've done nothing with the browser this episode. It's just been on that Jordan Mastodon thing the whole... I mean, we were talking about Mastodon, but... It must have a Wikipedia page. I swear I've read the Wikipedia. Oh, is it called Pixel Dungeon? I've got the Wikipedia Shattered page Pixel up Dungeon. In Italian. So, there we go. Anybody who speaks Italian? 2012 is when it's from. Ottobre 2012.
10 out of 10 of Steam, 4.7 out of 5.
It surprised me about Tales of Majael, actually, because I've played Tales of Majael on and off for a few years, but I assumed it was like proper old, like the original roguelikes, but Tales of Majael is from 2012 as well.
I mean, that's pretty old now. That's 10 years old.
I know, it's 10 years old, but it's relatively modern for a roguelike, for a traditional roguelike.
I was very sad to... There's a game called Wyvern, like as in the mythical creature. I discovered this with some old school friends when we were like 14 and mucking around on the internet. And it was like a really good little a 2D top-down grid sort of based, action-adventure game. In that spirit of Dungeons & Dragons, but with a little bit more, you know, gameplay sort of mechanics to it all. And it was really good. And it was a very small development, and there was a reasonably active forum. And there were there was quite a big set of requests that when the game started falling into unmaintenance, that a lot of people wanted to be like, okay, can you, how about you open source it? It's a Java great game. I'm sure people know Java and all that, you know. And in the end, it ended up going really down the mobile microtransactions route, and I'm just so sad. I didn't realize that they could sort of butcher a beloved childhood memory like that so easily.
Yeah, no, that's always sad.
It's you could have left the game in the past.
Similar kind of thing happened with, not a similar kind of thing, but Carmageddon, right? They did the sort of like remaster rebooty thing and put it on Steam, and it was just... Not quite the same as that, but it was just I just felt like, just leave these things in the past. It's just a little bit sad.
Yeah. it's even more egregious when they take out the original and you can only buy the...
Oh, yeah, no, to be fair, Carmageddon wasn't that. It was, I think they took the original and put it on Steam, but I think these things, I had really fond memories of Carmageddon, like playing it back in the day, and then you play it now and you're like, this is, by any reasonable modern standards, this is terrible.
Yeah, I'm like that, particularly with some racing games. I like, you know, like Screamer Rally was a great game that I really quite enjoyed at the time. These games, these particularly driving games, require a degree of modern-ish fidelity. I think there are low fidelity driving games, but they're usually stylistic. There's usually like a style to them to help you know rather than just be straight up bad graphics. But I think for some, because the driving is experience-based game. And they do try and recreate a lot of the, you know, like the branding and the culture and the sort of the atmosphere of the of you know, motorsports in particular. You know, they're trying to bring you into a real world, as it were. You know, you need, like, I don't know, fidelity of like rally games, for example.
I think driving games have to have all that stuff, but I agree about the fidelity. Mm. I mean, the fidelity is relative to the time. Like back in the day when I played. Was this called Stunt Car Racer? It looked amazing at that time, and it was a great game at that time. But you know, and then Gran Turismo on the PlayStation 1. I remember looking at Gran Turismo. I mean, you can Google pictures of it, but I remember looking at Gran Turismo on the PlayStation 1, and I was like, "This is photorealistic. Like graphics will never get better than this. We've done it. We've nailed it." You look at it now, kind of hilarious.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Same with Screamer Rally. It's like, you know, that's great. I was rallying through the countryside, you know?
It's like, this is so amazingly real. I remember the Flat Out too. I was like, this is it. Like, games do not have to get more realistic than this. It's perfect now. And now you play it now, and it's like cobble cut out cars in a weird, like, blurry landscape. It's good, though. I still play Flat Out too. So.
Well,
I've got another cool roguelike. I think you'll be interested in this one. This one's called Golden Crone Hotel. I just played a video of it. Golden Crone with a K, Hotel. And this is a traditional roguelike where you can either play as a vampire or as a vampire hunter.
Okay. It's like, pixel art, right?
It's like, yeah. It's like Masquerade, the Bloodlines, the Masquerade, but as a roguelike.
Okay, looks good.
It looks really cool. I've not played
this. Yeah, I like
the look. It's on my wish list.
Yeah, that's good. Did you ever play Secrets of Grindir?
A bit, yeah.
Did that one ever drag you in?
No, I think there was a time when it would have done, but I think it's a bit too transparently whatever. Not like a bit too, I don't know.
Did you try it single player or multiplayer?
Multiplayer. I think I tried it a bit single player as well.
I think I've only really played it in multiplayer, but I have had a good time. But again, for like a surface level kind of. You know.
Yeah, I think a few years ago I would have really enjoyed that, but I can't put my finger because it's very grindy, but there are grindy games that I love. I think it's just the something to do with the presentation plus the structure that I didn't quite get on with. But I'm trying to find it. Am I not logged in? Why does Steam randomly? There's a game I've been playing recently that I can't remember the name of it until I get into my account. I just got a Steam security. Oh, wait, no, that's me. There we go. Oh, no, apparently I'm in. Right. Swords and Souls, right? So this is a remake of an old Flash game that people used to play, apparently, that I never played, so I don't know about it. But it's the most grindy thing in the world, but I've been kind of enjoying it while I've been like watching TV stuff and that. It's an RPG. It's a auto battlery RPG type thing.
Mm-hmm.
The fighting is on screen now, but the way you level your character up is by doing these training mini games. And I imagine you're probably too young to remember like the old IK Plus, International Karate Plus game, where there was a level where you had this like pot lid and you had to block balls by doing this, like in three directions. And basically like the mini games where you level up are like that. So I would just sit there for hours, just like chopping apples in four directions, like, and you level up your combat and then you go out and do some fights. And like, it's, I don't know why it's enjoyable, but it's enjoyable as I'm like watching something on the other screen kind of thing. It's kind of.
Do you want to know a game I've been playing?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, this one's one to get at, right? I recently sort of rediscovered it after I was big into it, maybe about 8 or so years ago. I think it might have been a Flash game from one of those Flash game websites that they turned into a Steam game. It's called Crush the Castle Legacy Collection. And okay. It's kind of not hugely dissimilar to Flappy Birds. Not Flappy Birds, Angry Birds, that's the one.
Right, okay.
So you have a catapult, and you have a stone and wooden structure. You have to then use the catapult to take down the wooden structure.
Watching a video now. That looks like fun.
It is kind of fun. I recreated it, and I got, well, it says here, I bought it when it came back out on Steam. I played it for 6 hours. So...
Yeah, how much? It's 7 quid. Yeah. Yeah.
And really, it was just to tickle a nostalgia itch. But, like, they did just what I think, if I remember, yeah, like, I think they did exactly what they were supposed to do, which was, you know, take a Flash game.
Yeah.
Put it in a wrapper so, you know, Steam can do it. And then just sell it, right? No, not trying to insert any microtransactions or nonsense like that. They just take the game wholesale, bundle it in. It's a good job, and for what it is, I got 6 hours of entertainment out of it.
Absolutely Angry Birds, right? But presumably without the like intentionally compulsive gameplay. But do you ever play Besiege?
Yeah, I love Besiege. Oh yeah, man,
like not quite play Besiege, but a similar vein, right?
I can't. Yes, it's that same kind of vein. Besiege is like the much more advanced version where you build the catapult yourself. Oh man, I gotta play Besieged again. That is one of the best games.
Where it entered early access and I was like, that looks like a cool idea, and I played it for a couple of days and I've not played it since. I assume it must be released by now.
I think so.
Play it through.
It's pretty fantastic, especially once you start thinking with portals with it. Once you start getting into the way that the game works, what you can do in certain structures, you know, and you learn a little bit of structural engineering when you're at it, you know. It's
remember that years ago Flash game, like it was called something Contraptions, Fantastic Contraptions or something, where you had like pulleys and wheels and. Each level had a particular challenge, and you were just putting like mechanical 2D mechanical.
I remember those games; those were amazing. They were amazing. It was called something like Contraptions, or
which is a bit like what were the old The Incredible Machine? It's got that kind of vibe to it, right?
Actually, there's a game I haven't played for years, but now I'm starting to think it's the game where all the graphics are drawings.
Crayon Physics.
No. I need to do one. What's not okay? Right. So it's the I've got to sort through my games. The drawing ones. Contraption Maker. I don't know what that is.
Contraption Maker is by the person who made The Incredible Machine. It's supposed to be a modern The Incredible Machine, and I think it has all the classic The Incredible Machine levels in it, but.
Mm.
I didn't quite take to it. I don't know why.
Oh, okay. I wish this would be great if we had a stream that would they'd know exactly what we were. It's the one that is drawn. It's master. Is it not Master Plan? I Resistance, no. I mean, there's a game called The Master Plan that I own. It is not the game I'm thinking of. It's got plan. What if I type in plan? I want to say it's got to have. Oh, Transplan. That's the one.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, also Lovely Planet. That's kind of. Is that a? I haven't played that
oh, lovely.
Years.
Yeah. Transplant. Yeah. Okay, I've seen this one around. What's the gist with this one?
This one is like it's a little bit like contraptions, but problem solving.
Right.
You've got to use the tools like that they give you to solve the puzzle in front of you, like all games really.
That looks like fun. That looks like that would be a good relaxation game for me. Actually.
Yeah. Oh, the soundtrack's lovely. The soundtrack to it is just.
Oh, you know what? I would turn music off, Chris. I don't do music in games.
Some games like Shapes, great soundtrack. I actually bought the soundtrack on Bandcamp.
Games with great music, it's just I want to, when I'm playing it, I don't need a soundtrack while I'm playing a game. Like, I just sharp. Like, why do all games have music? I can choose my music. I feel like that actually in movies or TV shows with very heavy soundtracks. Like, why is music playing all the time while these people are talking? Like, why?
I'm with you on that one.
To punctuate like emotional blah blahs, the way Valve use music in their game, if you notice, like Half-Life, Half-Life 2, Portal, Left 4 Dead, it doesn't have music playing all the way through like a lot of games do.
And you notice when it does, and the cinematic impact of that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, like when absolutely.
But the idea, long found the idea of playing a game and constantly having music playing as just very very odd. It feels like we're at the this medium is so infantile that we're at the the silent movies with the piano, like they play literally play the piano. Well, it feels like that.
I don't know. This is difficult because you've kind of got to detach like memories from games. Have you always turned off music on games, or is this recent?
Not. I now turn it off. Right at the start of playing a game, I used to leave it on until it annoyed me. Like even with Morrowind, like I love the music in Morrowind, but when it's just like it's five tracks basically, and one of them is randomly chosen every time one ends, right? And there comes a point where you're just sick of hearing it.
I don't know.
This is not for you.
I think some games yes, some games no. It's interesting how Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas do it when they've got like a radio on your wrist that is like, oh, you can turn this music off. But beneath the radio, they've got this eerie, it's like an aria. Like it's like, actual music. It's just...
Yeah, no, I'm cool with that.
I like that. That is, to me, ideal. And it's quite good when... You turn like you when you don't have the radio on, it makes it very apparent that you're in a wasteland, that you're in a wide open, barren, hardly anyone lives here kind of place. And that little soft violin is just like it just you wouldn't even know it's there unless you were looking for it. That's kind of the ideal soundtrack, with the exception of your big cinematic climax moments, right? I can see how Morrowind would probably get a little bit annoying, and I'm sure there have been times when I've turned the music off. But in my head, it just said, like, now, I don't feel like that because it's...
I mean, when I hear that, elsewhere, when I hear... Like, it transports me right back. I'm like, oh my God, that music's so good. If I sit down and play the game, I'm like, shut up, let me play the game.
Oh, speaking of that song... Oh man, I hope I've got the video in my YouTube favorites. Yes, I do. Oh my God. All right. I don't know if you've seen this. It's okay. I think I want to say just put this on, right? For the folks at home. I will copy the link in. I don't care if we get a copyright ding for it. We got a copyright ding for Kunk on Earth last week.
Did we really?
We got a content ID. Sorry, just to be careful.
I did leave it playing a little bit too long.
It's fine. It actually says on there, nothing's like it doesn't change anything. Yeah. It's just we've picked it up. So
very naughty.
I don't think I got to try it. I think it's like these kind of things are okay. I don't know if you've ever seen that though. just popped it in. For a minute I thought I popped into another chat. No, that's yeah.
Is that paid? There we go. Okay.
Yeah. This
should,
is.
Should I put the sound on for this?
Put this. You have to put the sound on for this. Put it on your toes and down on heels.
Right. Rise and fall of the step. Right. I think I've seen this.
One. And continue to rise on two. Continue to rise on three. And at the end of three, go down. Then on one, down.
This is making up for the lack of screen use in the first half of the
This is reminding me, I think it's okay to talk over this. This is reminding me of this was a few months ago. I can't remember where I came across it, but there was this dude who used to do little learn English segments on public access TV, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody set all of them to like Morrowind, to Oblivion, like music and graphics. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, that sounds amazing though.
It is absolutely amazing. We're going to have to find it. And
Did they do that on TV, or is this?
No. They didn't do that because it's from like the 90s. But somebody's taken it on YouTube. I'm English. Is that going to get me there? Okay, I see the point of this now.
Yeah, how does that music just crop up though? That's amazing.
At home with English. You're going to love this.
Oh, by the way, Expert Village is a really, really, really good channel. There's a guy who shows you how to make I think that's where you make a three-cheese pizza. I'm going to order the videos on Expert Village and see what the most popular is. Oh, my God. How the hell does how to use a Hara and leg shiatsu massage... how to do one? How like why that's their most popular video? Oh, come on. And their second most popular video is improving your yoga stretching, yoga down dog and half dog pose. Oh, no. How to swing down. Oh. Wow, none of the their viral video. They must have put a lot of money into making sure that their videos about their silly videos don't make it to the top of their most popular videos. Like Expert Village old videos. Wow, hidden treat. Oh, is that? No, this is Expert. Yeah. Oh, yes. I found the three cheese pizza guy. Oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. It's the same channel.
Okay, let's have a look at this.
You're about to have your mind blown.
I think I've seen it. It looks familiar.
By Expert Cooking.
Oh, yeah, I know this one.
Hi, I'm Chef Mike Nyland. I'm a Tucson personal chef, and I'm here to show you how to make a three-cheese blend for pizza. First, you start with shredded mozzarella, then a shredded provolone.
I always imagine these kind of things must be like a silly video they did at the end of the day after filming actual videos or something.
And then you can use it for your favorite pizza. That's how you make a three-cheese blend for your pizza.
Do you see that thing on Feddy the other day that was people in the United States writing about eating pizza for the first time in the 50s?
No.
Am I going to be able to find it? So it's just like people being like amazed at this new exotic, exciting, really complicated food called a pizza, but it's spelt pizza, but it's pronounced pizza. You know. I must have favorited that. But I did want to also mention another. I just thought of another. This is a roguelite game. There's I'm gonna put it on Steam in a minute when I found this pizza thing. But so it's a game where you are a poet, or I think it says you're a magician, but essentially you write poetry. So what happens is you get cards. So it's a card based roguelite turn based combat game, right? Mm-hmm. But you get cards with thematic words on them, like water or home or death. And then you choose on your turn, you choose three cards, and then an AI takes those three words and writes a poem using those three words as like kind of seeds for the poem. Nice. So it's like proper like creative AI, isn't it? They actually writes a poem, and then you're kind of scored based on how much the theme of the poem matches up with the cards you chose. Kind of, I'm not explaining this very well, but like that kind of gist. And I love that idea. In fact, I'm going to find that.
Wow. Let's get
the thing because I can't find it. Something versus or something. I must have got on my wish list. Verses of enchantment.
Verses of enchantment.
Yeah. So yeah, you choose these thematic cards, and then an AI writes a poem, and the poems are terrible, with the occasional one that's like a little bit like, oh, that's actually, yeah. But I love it as a theme for a card-based combat game.
Okay. Yeah. It kind of looks like a fun game.
Mm. Yeah. So I watched a YouTube playthrough of it because they did a demo. It's like it's not finished yet. Mm. And it was fun to watch. But the dev commented on the video saying like, look, the poems are going to get better. We're working on it. We're training the AI. You know, we're going to make it so it makes the poems actually make. I kind of love that they don't make a lot of sense.
That's kind of amazing.
I've got a couple of TV shows I can do very briefly.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so this week, Chris, I've been watching Manifest, which is, I think every week I'm just going to have like a trashy TV show and a good TV show. Manifest,
that's good, yeah.
Very much the trashy TV show. It's essentially some passengers go on a plane,
mm-hmm.
and then when the plane lands, it's 5 years later. But not, you know, for them it was just a normal flight, but they land and it's 5 years later. But also they're getting visions and stuff, and they're kind of seeing the future, and they're being given tasks and messages from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to fulfill these tasks. And in later seasons, it gets a bit religiously in terms of where they're getting these messages from, but it's entertaining, schlocky, trashy nonsense. And I've very much enjoyed it.
Hmm.
Second one, again? That's called Manifest. I should really
Manifest.
Put the trailer, but I'll put the trailer on for the other one. The other one's actually good. So The Peripheral.
The Peripheral.
Yeah, this one. I didn't realize this when I started watching it, but it's based on a William Gibson novel.
Mm-hmm.
William Gibson being, you know, famous for inventing cyberpunk and writing Neuromancer and all that. And it's about this young girl who, it's, you know, it's set in the future. Young girl who likes video games, and essentially video games are all VR at that point. But then she gets this headset that puts her in a robot in the future, and people in the future are trying to get her to do stuff. And there's like, you know, conspiracies and stuff going on. But this one's like actual quality. It's got it's got acting, and it's got writing. It's actually very smartly written. Like the dialogue.
That's legitimately. Like, that's an interesting concept.
It's an interesting concept, and I was thinking the other day, I was actually thinking about you when I was watching it, because there are characters in it who have power. You know, they have actual power, like they can fuck up your life if they want to.
Mm.
But there's one character in particular who, she's very good at like unspoken threats in a kind of Game of Thrones at its best kind of way. Do you know what I mean? So when Cersei's like, power is power, you know, that kind of, but less explicit than that. This is far subtler and far, like, kind of far more threatening actually because of it. And I think the writing there really excels. It's that whoever's writing this is really good at writing scary, powerful people.
Oh, okay. And so this is like, so if her robot gets broken or dies, then she it's assumed that she would lose this ability to talk.
No. I think she can zap into, because essentially, I don't want to give too much away. It's a little bit of a spoiler to tell you that she's in a robot in the future, but that's episode one, right? She thinks she's in a video game to begin with. And it's only revealed later that she's in the future inhabiting a robot. But these, so it's the future. Her setting is 2030, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the world is very much going to shit. The future that she's sent to is 2070, after the world has gone to shit and has kind of recovered. But it's recovered with a much lower population and these very powerful three factions in control,
mm-hmm.
sort of. So so she's not really sure, like, who she's working for, what she's doing, and whether what she's doing is right, because she's been given such little information, right? But she's also intrigued and invested, and there's a lot going on that I don't want to talk about. But, like, yeah, no, it's very compelling, actually.
This has a Deus Ex ring to it.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, no, absolutely Deus Ex ring to it. In fact, there was, because the bits where she believes she's in a video game, I think there were explicit Hitman and Deus Ex nods.
Oh my god, a show with both
of those?
There's
a corridor that she has a little fight in like episode two or something that reminded me of, it very much reminded me of a particular location in the first Deus Ex game.
New York Island, Liberty Island, that's the one.
No, I think it's a corridor in an MJ-13 complex or something. It's not actually an important environment. It's just I've always remembered it for some reason, and it just very much reminded me of that. And then there's a bit in episode one where she's at kind of like a fancy party that has very distinct like Hitman vibes.
Mm.
I think you'd enjoy this. It's slow in that nice way. It's not slow. I shouldn't really say slow, but it's not rushed. It doesn't feel rushed. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, bombarding you with action scenes to keep you entertained. It's thoughtful.
How much has been released so far?
Yeah, it's all out. I think it's an Amazon thing. Mm. So all of season one is out. It's only 10 episodes, 10 hour long. I think it's 10, somewhere around there. 10 hour long episodes. I'll stick the trailer for Manifest on as well, even though it's absolute trash. Manifest is four seasons all out. Do not recommend you watch it. It's dreadful.
Manifest.
Yeah. Awful, awful schlock that I love. Really enjoyed watching. Terrible.
Well, you know, sometimes some, like, you know, unserious TV is a bit of a laugh. I'm watching Taskmaster, which is, I'm quite enjoying.
I've seen bits of that. I could not possibly watch that.
It's a silly show, you know. I like it because it's a little bit of a state, like, it's a bit more like, you need a bit more oomph than just a panel show. I think it's a good remedy to the, because I like the panel show in its day. I think it's a bit boring now that they're made up entirely of like stand-up comics, but like,
yeah,
you know, in olden panel show days when they were like better, you'd have guests, you know, you'd have a mix of specialized guests and comedians with, you know, that would have some kind of tangential link. But now it just seems, if you're doing a comedy stand-up tour, you're gonna,
I'm taking the fun out of it by bringing this up, and I apologize for that, but have I got news for you, largely responsible for the rise of Boris Johnson?
You're not the only one that would say that.
Would you disagree?
They gave him
such a platform.
They gave him a big boost.
Perform his affable, you know.
And then they turn around and start, and when it's popular to start slagging him off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is classic liberalism, really. Like, empower these right wing nut jobs, and then pretend you had nothing to do.
And then you're, yeah, then a gas.
And it's all like, we're even-handed, you know.
Mm. This, yeah. When really they're just slow.
I do, yeah, no, I do kind of miss those shows, though, but I think I just became cynical about them.
And also saturated. I mean, there's such an easy format for a show to put together.
Yeah. The one I occasionally, and this is almost like a guilty pleasure, like embarrassing, but occasionally I'll watch like a compilation video of 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown on YouTube.
It's not the worst. I mean, really I like Countdown, and 8 out of 10 Cats is undeniably more entertaining than Countdown. I like, I watched it back when it was Nick Hewitt. I don't know if they've got a new host now. It kind of died with Richard Whiteley, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, but it kind
very
of
did. Very UK-centric.
Yeah, it's like, and he worked that show for like 40 years. Let the show die with him.
Yeah.
Round out a season of like Carol Vorderman doing it or something like that. She could probably do, you know, but like round out a series and then just close the show. Sorry, I don't
there's
know
one,
why I've
got such there's one particular. This is what I can see. There's one particular 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown clip where it's Peter Serafinowicz. I said that right? Peter Serafinowicz. What's the name of the host?
Jimmy Carr.
Jimmy Carr. It's just the introduction bit. It's the bit at the beginning. He's like, you know, I'd like to welcome in Dictionary Corner Peter Serafinowicz. Like, do you like word games, Peter? And Peter Serafinowicz just goes, frankly, Jimmy, I don't think that's any of your business. It's just delivered so dry. It's like the most British humour that
it is. And actually, to be fair, I quite like Sean Locke as a comedian, and I think
I very much do not.
Oh, I liked him on 8 out of 10 Cats. I do like that. That is a guilty pleasure show that I can. And I like Countdown because, you know, I do like the numbers. They actually do the numbers and the letters properly.
For real, yeah. There's something very old fashioned feeling about it, right? It's like game shows from the 70s where they were less bombastic and less like over the top and a bit clunk, you know, you could see that there was just somebody in the background like moving a stick kind of thing.
Yeah. But it does feel like 8 out of 10 Cats is the modern version of it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
We the world is weirder.
Well, we no longer want to see clever people playing quiz games. We want to see stupid people playing quiz games.
I don't care about. I never connected with any contestant on Countdown. I always because you do it yourself. Do you know what I mean? You do it yourself at home.
Yourself. Yeah.
So I don't care if it's you know Sean Locke or whatever, or I don't care if it's you know Gary from the Chip Shop. I play against myself. If I get a 6-letter word, I'm generally pretty happy. If I'm honest, you know.
Yeah, but in university, when we all used to watch it together, we were pretty into Countdown. But generally, see, I'm not good at anagrams. I'm not good at word. The numbers bit I was okay. But I'm really dreadful at anagrams. I cannot process anagrams. So it was not a lot. It's not that much fun to play along.
So but we did used to.
We used to get drunk and play it ourselves with a. I think there's a card game called like Lexicon or something that just has letters. So I think I'd put a black scarf on my head to indicate that I'm Carol. And I would like get out the letters, and we'd be very drunk, just playing Countdown in the flat. That was very entertaining.
Mm. I'm pretty bad at Scrabble.
I'm all right at Scrabble, but I'm not good.
I've got a game. This is a good one. This is a game I want other people to know about.
Mm-hmm.
It is a mobile game. Can you, if you can bring it up, can you bring up the F-Droid store?
Can I do that in a web browser?
Yeah, if you go to f-droid.org, you can see the storefront. You can search the storefront straight from the website.
Droid.org. Okay, and what's the game called?
It is called. Okay, right. I didn't prepare this, but it is a game.
It is a game.
It's a game that exists. I must.
I'm doing the browser thing correctly, and you're holding me up, making me look unprofessional.
Crosswords.
Oh, I've got that in Steam.
And it is available. Hang on, Crosswords is not in Steam, is it?
If I'm thinking, am I thinking the right one? No, I'm not thinking the right one.
It's available in the Google Play Store, but because Crosswords is such a terrible name to search, you're not going to find it. So
is just it crossword Scrabble like game with an X and Scrabble a W? Like game, yeah, okay. On F-Droid, it doesn't even have a screenshot.
No, but it does have a link to a website, and the link to the website links into the Google Play. So if you want to get it on Google Play for whatever reason, if you're not on F-Droid,
where's the link to the website?
I can hold up. I can put the game up, and I can hold up my phone.
Got it. Website. Okay.
Oh, I themed it nicely.
You're gonna have to sell this one. Tell me about this game.
So I like playing Scrabble with some people, and we tried the Scrabble game out quite some time ago. And when you start the official Scrabble game, it was great. But over time, they infuse more and more adverts and more notifications and more microtransactions and all this kind of stuff. And it kind of ramps it up a little bit. I hate it when apps do that. Really bad practice when they don't give you adverts until you've used the app for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's just so manipulative. But they did that on Scrabble. And it just became such a sellout app, right? Like it had a good game beneath it, but it had so notifications. One of the notifications, I shit you not, was some like trivia about the origins of the game Scrabble, the board game. So did you know Scrabble started in 1920? That's not notification worthy. They've abused my notifications. But the trouble is, you could play with people all over the world Scrabble, and it would be good, right? Like, you know, and it was. You just play Scrabble with a random person,
and
it could be a long game. Like maybe you take it in turns every other day or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's fine. You're playing Scrabble with some random person from the other side of the world, and you take it in turns every other day, like old fashioned mail chess.
That's old
school gaming. If you want that, is chess Scrabble? By post?
Is this just multiplayer Scrabble? Is that what this is?
It's open source Scrabble. However, there's a few gadgets in it that actually make it quite amusing. You can play over SMS, for example.
Right.
So it really is like postal Scrabble.
How are they not getting sued? Because there was about 10 years ago, or maybe there was that very big Scrabble website, quite a slick one, that a lot of people were using, and then they got sued, I think, by whoever owned Scrabble.
Oh shit! If we were a big podcast, we couldn't say things like this then. Right. So. You know, it's good that we're not a very big podcast
one of the things I like about like an open source thing like this, they can sue it all they want. It's open source. You're not going to get rid of it. If people want to play this, they will play this.
Yeah, or fork it and call it Thumbs Up for Jimmy.
Scrabulous? Wabulous? Werbulous?
Wabulous.
That was the website one. But no,
call it Monopoly.
Sorry?
Call it Monopoly.
The one I was thinking of, the Steam one, was called Not Words, with a K. And I think this is one of these. I think it was a little bit riding off the back of Wordle, but it is its own thing. It's kind of cool. I didn't get into it that much, but it's kind of cool. You might like it if you like the word games.
Mm. I've just stumbled across a great one on Steam. It's called The Political Process. Explore, and it's related to, it says, similar games you've played, Long Live the Queen, one of my favourite games ever created, really. And it says, explore a dynamic world of politics in this turn-based political simulator. Create a character, run for a political office, write legislation, balance budgets, and more as you move up the political hierarchy.
Ooh. This does fall into my shitty graphics requirement.
Create a custom politician. I'm really tempted. $11.39 for like a shitty joke game is a little, you know, like I'd rather it be less than a tenner, but like
it's not serious.
We could do a joint playthrough of it, couldn't we? Both create our own political, do that on either a live stream or a and just
what I'd like to do is we both write the name of like 20 politicians, and we stick them all in a hat, mix them up, we pick one out, and we have to play in the style. So you might get like Al Gore, and you've got to play perfectly in the style of Al Gore.
They'd have to be all American presidents, right? Or would we have
I would get sick of a few like John Major. I think like role playing a really dull politician. Not that I think Al Gore is actually quite cool, but yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah. God, do you know what? I saw John Major on the telly the other day, and I'm not, you know, I'm not like a conservative, but like,
no.
He spoke with so much.
As Tory prime ministers went, he was actually one of the much better ones. And something that I always kind of get into with John Major and Tony Blair is like, you know, the Northern Ireland peace process, John Major had done most of the work, and then Tony Blair comes in and takes the credit. Like, I actually feel quite bad for John Major for that.
Yeah. But like, he speaks so much like better. Okay, that's a terrible sentence to explain that. Than almost like any recent prime minister.
I've been thinking about that lately, like the caliber of politicians in Westminster. I've tooted this, but I was rewatching the 2017 election earlier today, right? And at one point, Ken Clark is interviewed, and he just, in terms of just eloquence and, like, I don't agree with his politics, obviously, but just eloquence and. What's the word for being like true to your own blah blah? Like, he just
integrity.
He wasn't playing a game. He genuinely had these beliefs and is interested in, you know, these beliefs being blah blah blah. And the only one that comes close in that regard for me is, oh, what's her name? I'm never going to remember her name, so I'm not going to be able to finish the sentence. Emily Thornberry. No, something like that. Emily Thornberry, is that a person?
Well, there is a politician called Emily Thornberry.
Yeah, she speaks quite well.
I get school mom vibes off of her.
But I like that.
That's not the worst.
I don't think she's particularly good because she ran for Labour leadership, didn't she? And I don't think she's particularly good in that environment. But on TV, talking to reporters, I think she's very good. Like, she seemed, I mean, this is under Corbyn as well, and she came across as, I know she wasn't so much behind the scenes, but she, you know, she would support him publicly while speaking intelligently, and I think that, you know.
Yeah, but, anyway, sorry, we sidetracked from the political process. Listening to John Major speak over recent prime ministers is... We could do that political process. Although we still got to do our multiplayer Morrowind, which I'm totally down for.
Got to do the multiplayer Morrowind. Also, I really want to drag you into Crusader Kings 3.
I think we should play that. Yeah, we should like dedicate a day to it or something. Waking hours are suitable for it. And
totally, that's totally doable. Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
Awesome. Great. All right. Have you got any more on your list?
I think I'm good. There's other things on my list, but I think we've gone in other directions, and I think that's fine.
I mean, I always think of a million and one things to say the second the podcast goes on. The most frustrating. If I ever dawdle around the end of any kind of podcast, if that's the reason why, it's because I'm convinced that there's more to say, and I'm stupid for not writing it down. Like this.
I mean, the main thing we've talked about this time is the Fediverse stuff and the Twitter influx, and I think we were a bit rambly about that, really. It's because a lot of it is just reacting emotionally to it at the moment, because we don't really know where it's going to go. It's a huge thing. For the Fediverse, it's a huge, huge thing, and we don't really know where it's going to go, and it's a mixture of optimism and worry and hope and, you know, all bundled together.
Absolutely, yeah. It's and you know, like, it's one of those things, because it's a place that is built by the people who live there, it's, you're more attached to it. Like, if Twitter goes, who cares, you know?
Yeah,
no one's gonna, like, you know, you can say that, like, Twitter has allowed someone to do something they wouldn't otherwise have been able to do, but, like, I, you know, they probably will. They'll, you know, they'd find a way in the future, as it were. If Twitter didn't exist, I'd like to think that people would have found other ways to have achieved their goals.
We'd be better off for it.
Quite possibly, yeah. But, you know, because you can never, ever, ever sort of quantify the path not travelled, really. There are so many things that come into play that, you know, and that's why I try not to, you know, pin too many sort of hopes on what an influx of new users mean. I just try and focus on the, if I can still have a decent time chatting shit with people, that's as long as I can do that, I'm generally going to be fine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't want to be one of those people that, as I grow older, refuses to change and adapt and accept the new ways. I want to be, you know, I don't want to be a, what you might call a boomer, right? You know?
Yeah, a gammon.
A gammon. I don't want to be a gammon. I want to understand that the world is moving, and you know, you just got to make the best of it, right?
Even if you're not culturally equipped to appreciate the new things, you can try to understand why other people like them, I think. And I think that's an important thing to do.
Yeah, and not try and fight it, you know? And not not
just get all defense and be it stupid. It's, you know, the new thing, you know. But apart from the haircuts, kids today have stupid haircuts. That's that, you know, that part is always true. The young generation, their hair always stupid.
Yeah. I mean, my hair was definitely stupid when I was a teenager, to be honest.
And mine too. Mine was absolutely absurd. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But apart from the hair, everything I like, you know, the music and the habits and the memes and all that stuff. It's all cool.
It definitely seems like, you know, there's more faith to be had in what's coming down the pipeline than what's past, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah.
That's a weird analogy, but you know what I mean. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
So there we go. Right, cool.
Yeah. Okay. Should we?
Mm-hmm. I think.
So where can they reach you, Chris?
Well, I'm in the Fediverse. I'm Chris Ware at toot.wales, or my website, which does all the other stuff, chrisware.wales.
I was thinking, like, they're not called Toots anymore, and you're on toot.wales. You're gonna have to
like in Back to the Future.
they're gonna have to buy a new domain, publish.wales.
Publish.wales. Oh. we're like the last holdout of the toot. Although in Welsh, toot is spelt differently. It's T-W with a hat on it, T.
I thought it would be that. Should we genuinely try and get Eugen on?
We can, we can give him
you can always say no.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how busy he is. I mean, he's not rich. He still is.
Just a dude.
I wish people, like, all this influx of people would translate into, you know.
I don't want him to be. We don't want to create another billionaire. But
no.
I like for him to be comfortable for creating such an amazing thing. For him to be comfortably off would be nice. Yeah.
Mm. And like the ability that he could, I reckon he would be quite good at dispersing money to other projects that need it.
Yeah,
so like,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
I think if Mastodon were to become flush with cash, I think he'd give it to people who helped with like ActivityPub protocol and instances. You know, I think he'd probably, you know, that's kind of the
what we could do is get Eugen on and like pretend we're confused and pretend we think he's Elon Musk.
The trouble is though, we've had conversations, so.
No, we'll try and do that. I think it'd be nice actually. I don't think we should do it every episode or whatever, but actually people listening can tell us what they think. But I think every now and then just get like, you know, somebody who does stuff in the Foss/Fedi space on and get them to, not necessarily like an interview, we don't want to ask them, what do you do? Why did you do it? Where did it start? You know, that gets dull after a while. Just like involve them in the things we talk about. A bit of that, but I think that'd be fun. What do people think?
I like that idea. Just like a chat, shoot the shit, you know, nothing.
I'm not necessarily even like, you know, like, because there are kind of like Fedi celebrities, right, and Foss celebrities, but like we mentioned her earlier, the woman who runs Mastodon Art, she's just really active. She does cool stuff. Be nice to get her on, talk to her, see what she thinks about stuff.
Yeah, Mastodon Art is one of the premier Mastodon instances,
She works so hard.
It's amazing. And also, the thing I like about Mastodon Art that I wish other instances would give thought to is that signups aren't just like an open door policy. Like you have to like do a little application. I like when instances do that because it's such a good way of like moderate. Like it's like you're sort of making an asserted attempt to moderate from the off. You know, it's
I think also I think there have been studies on this. If you like, if you just make a small barrier, like all the trolls can't be asked. You know, or 99% of the trolls can't be asked. So you just create a better community right off the bat.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit like actually. Have I talked about Aleppo.social?
rings a bell.
It's the Mastodon instance where you cannot use the letter E.
Yeah, we've done that.
Yeah. don't with that yourself. Barrier to entry, you think about, you know, yeah, do yeah, I really yeah. want to, you know. It's and there's little var- yeah, like I think that sometimes today, you know, it can be the case of like things are so slick and easy that you can do more things without really thinking it through.
Yeah,
and, you
know. Yeah, a little bit of thought. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Definitely on board.
So where can they find you, friendo.monster?
They can't find me at friendo.monster anymore because I was very worried about money and the renewal was coming up and I was like, I'm gonna have to let that slip.
Is Monster one of the more expensive ones?
No, but I was very worried about money. So what I did instead is I let it lapse, and then recently I got a new domain because somebody reminded. This is going down another rabbit hole. I'll put this as briefly as possible. Somebody reminded me that you can get a free VPS through Oracle Cloud.
Ah, yes. Right?
So I got a free VPS through Oracle Cloud. I put my Gemini and my web server on there, and I was like, I need a domain now. So I bought a domain for roughly £1. So now I am drew.monster. And I'm kind of thinking, when it comes up for renewal in a year's time, rather than paying £10 to renew it, I might just get another £1 new one.
That would be amazing.
Shift domains every year. Actually, I almost got stolen.motorcycles. but it was one of those where I was like, is that funny or is that just me right now? Or will I find that funny in a month's time or just like annoyingly long?
That would be funny. Drew at Stolen Motorcycle.
Stolen motorcycle. The other one I was thinking of getting was because there's a .yachts TLD, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of having yachts.yachts, but the first yachts is spelled YOTS. Because then in this situation where I'm trying to explain that, it would be like yachts.yachts, but it's ended up with just drew.monster.
And that's kind of good. Yeah, Gandhi.net, who are my providers, who I like them, but they're not the cheapest. They do very good, like, first-year offers. So if you're ever doing something like
I think all domain. Yeah, I get my domains through Namecheap. I don't want to sponsor them. Like, I'm not recommending them by any means or anything like that. But, yeah, when you buy a new domain, it's, like, £1. And when you renew the domain, it's, like, £10 or £20. Like,
I've seen such massive disparities in that.
Next time, okay, I keep meaning to bring this up. Next time, I want to ask you about Gemini, because you don't have a Gemini site anymore, do you?
No, I don't. Actually, kind of for the same reasons as you, is like I had quite a lot of expenditure. Mm. You know, it's cost of living crisis. Things ain't getting any cheaper. So I'm keeping a pretty firm hand on my expenses as well. So
yeah, fair enough.
I basically just let my DigitalOcean droplet that I mess around on lapse. And
yeah. They're also putting the prices up because of the energy stuff.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm on neocities.org with my main website, and I'm paying the subscriber tier, which is about $5 a month. But that's like
be bothered. Get one of these. The free Oracle VPS is actually better than the cheapest DigitalOcean droplet.
Is it now?
Yeah, it's a gig of memory as opposed to, I think it's 500 or half a gig on DigitalOcean.
Oh, and it just gives you.
It was really complicated and to set up. It was very confusing, honestly, and I kind of know what I'm doing. But yeah, once I got it set up, it works fine.
Hmm.
Anyway, we're going to keep.
Yeah.
This is the problem, isn't it? We think we're
this
out of topics.
This is the bit where we dodder around. Okay. Thank you for joining us. So, drew.monster, chrisware.wales, we're both on the Fediverse.
Yeah.
I think maybe we're linked on the freebooters PeerTube thing. But in all honesty, if you're listening to us now, just comment on or whatever. I don't know. Get in touch with it. You'll work it out.
Use the internet before. You can probably work it out. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Thank you for joining us. And yeah, feedback is always welcome.
Yep.
Good. All right. Toodaloo.
Bye-bye.